We're talking about the paper industry here in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So when you think of paper, it may be that ream of office paper sitting next to the printer. But what about the wrapper holding your peanut butter cup? That's paper. As is the cardboard and brown paper packaging around that Amazon delivery at your door. New analysis says pulp and paper was an $18 billion industry last year and the fifth largest manufacturing sector in our state. Do you work in the industry? What's your job? What do you want to share about working in paper? Do you live near a mill? What's that been like? How do you see paper mills handling their waste? Join in at 800-642-1234. Paul Fowler is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology at UW-Stevens Point, and he's been at the helm since this institute launched in 2010, helping businesses develop products that make sustainable use of natural resources. Paul, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Well, your institute prepared this 111-page report on the economic conditions of pulp and paper. This was a report for the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. You've been around this industry a long time. What stood out to you? What surprised you in the numbers?
Well, I think what surprised us was the fact that we talk about Wisconsin being the paper state, and I think the really standout number is over 30,000 men, women working in the paper manufacturing industry. That's in paper mills, but it's also those downstream industries that process the large rolls of paper coming out of mills. We call them converters. So between the converters, about 20,000 people, another 10,000 people working in the mills. Those numbers help to substantiate the claim that Wisconsin is the number one paper-making state in the nation. And also, I think what stood out was it's not number one by a small amount. It's far and away the largest paper-making state.
Oh, Pennsylvania is about number two, is that right?
Right, number two with just shy of 23,000 employees. So Wisconsin, about 30% ahead in terms of employee numbers. In terms of labor, wages, $2.6 billion of wages paid in Wisconsin versus about 1.5, 1.6 in Pennsylvania.
Have we always been a leader in the industry like this?
Pretty much. I think there's a sense maybe that the industry in Wisconsin was in some sort of decline. But these numbers, I think, resolutely show the number one position of the industry.
Paul, what are the most common paper products made in Wisconsin?
Well, I think what's interesting from the study is that there's a really diverse sort of mix of paper products made. So we're familiar with printing and writing grades, right? Those are the ones that capture the headlines. But there's also a lot of corrugated cardboard, containerboard, cartonboard, tissue and towel. So that's things like bathroom tissue and paper towels and so on. And then a really substantial chunk of what we call specialties. And those are the really specific grades that Wisconsin really excels at making. They go into a range of different industrial applications with very specific performance uses.
Sounds like we're pretty diversified.
Diversity, I think, gives us some strength as well. That mix of production tells us that we're not really overweight in any one particular sort of grade of paper, which leaves us in a good position.
So when you look at the paper and the specialty papers, where is the industry seeing growth? Where do you see upward movement?
Well, I think there's growth really in containerboard. That's in, as you mentioned at the start of the piece, the brown cardboard boxes that arrive on pretty much everyone's doorstep on a daily basis. The industry is being responsive to producing more and more of that material. We're seeing growth in specialty, and we're also seeing some growth in tissue and towel, too.
We're looking at the pulp and paper industry with Paul Fowler. He's Executive Director of the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology at UW-Stevens Point. And his institute recently prepared a report on the industry for the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. Do you work in Wisconsin's paper industry? What's your job and where do you work? Are you part of a union? What should people know about the industry? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Steve now, joining us from Oshkosh. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. What is your attachment to the paper industry?
Well, I've worked for Applin Papers, which is now known as Appian, for the last 19 years now.
What's your story like? What has that 19 years been like for you?
Well, I moved here and I didn't even know about the industry. Got hired and started working at the mill, which is an experience in itself. And then just the ups and downs with recession that hit and being laid off. And then Appian's story is, you know, we fell on the hard times and was a little mismanaged and ended up in bankruptcy, and now we're slowly working our way out of it. So it's been a ride.
Yeah, it's been a ride, and you've been there for ups and downs now. What is your job specifically, if I may ask?
I work on a rewinder. I'm converting rolls into, as your guest said, specialty. Most of the product is thermal-based. It's point of sale, like that receipt you get at a gas station, to ticket in, ticket out, plane tickets, anything that we can get a niche in. And the receipt you get at Vegas, which no longer uses poker chips, we make that. You know, anything, you know, we process anything we can.
Well, Steve, thank you. Yeah, thank you for your story. Paul, it sounds like Steve has gone through the ups and downs of his particular company. And you've said the industry seemed to be in decline, but maybe that's not the case anymore. What do you hear in Steve's story?
Well, I think it's reflective of what was happening at the start of the Great Recession. So in the 3 years after 2008, 2009, the industry lost about 10% of its employees. What we've seen, though, since about 2012, 2013, is a real leveling off in terms of those job losses. And in fact, our latest numbers are showing something of an uptick as companies are starting to rehire. So it's been a really sort of tumultuous kind of time in the industry, but we're describing the position now sort of as a new normal in terms of employee numbers. But we also see a lot of transformational change ahead as the industry responds and becomes proactive to sort of mega trends that are happening around the globe, around e-commerce, which we've talked about already, the container boards, around food packaging. A huge shift towards convenience food preparation and food service, where the industry is responding in terms of packaging papers and food service goods, and then the undeniable anti-plastic sentiment that has sort of swept around the globe in the last 18 months or so. Opportunities to innovate there as well. So I understand that there were some really tricky, tragic times for families over the last. Over the last decade and more, but I think the industry is really kind of stepping up and responding to some of these mega trends as I just described.
We're checking in on the paper industry with Paul Fowler as our guide. He directs the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology, and his organization recently prepared a report on the economic contribution of pulp and paper in our state. Do you employ paper mill workers? What do you think about Wisconsin's role in the industry? How have you seen the paper industry evolve? What do you think about the waste that comes from paper mills and how it's handled? Be part of the conversation, 800-642-1234, to share your story. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're getting a read on how the paper industry is doing here on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Chirkent. By the numbers, our state had 34 paper mills last year, employing about 30,000 people, soundly leading the nation by many metrics. The industry is a powerful force at the Capitol as well. Recall last year, Kimberly Clark, after a proposed $100 million incentive package was defeated, Governor Walker approved a scaled-back package giving Kimberly-Clark a $28 million tax cut to help save its Fox Crossing plant. Here's Governor Walker in December talking with the press.
Our focus all along had really been about this plant and these operations here, not only for the employees, but because we understood that this was the most viable part of their operations, and this is a strong and growing part of the consumer market.
Do you work in a community with a paper mill? Have you experienced the closure of a mill? How did it affect your town? 800-642-1234 to join in. Paul Fowler directs the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology, and he stays with us. Paul, we just heard from Governor Scott Walker there in December. Why did lawmakers reject the former governor's $100 million proposal for Kimberly-Clark last year?
Oh, I could not speak to that. I don't know why they rejected it.
Well, why isn't it important, though, that lawmakers really pay attention to issues when they see a Kimberly-Clark saying, you know what, we're going to pull back on a mill, we're going to draw down workers, what kind of impact does that have on a community?
So I think that lawmakers should look across the industry as a whole, right, and enact legislation which is going to be supportive of the entire industry. What I think is really stood out from our report was the number of mills that are in rural communities where one mill or one facility has a really substantial impact on a community. Maybe the single largest employer in a community. And so I think it's important then to recognize that there are market forces driving the outputs of those mills, but to understand the knock-on effect that a mill closure could have.
What kind of effect could a mill closure have on a rural community?
Well, we recognize that we talk about the number of direct jobs, those 30,000 men and women that are employed within the industry. The indirect jobs, the transportation, the commercial loggers that support those mills, another 30,000 or so employees supporting those industries. So for every job that you would lose there, another job would be lost in those indirect. But then there's also the so-called induced impacts. Those are the businesses that are providing restaurant services, retail, and so on that support those jobs too. Mills, remember, are on the whole, large employers, 400 or 500 members, headcounts in some of those establishments. So, if it's in a small town, then a really significant impact if one were to close.
You've said companies are seeing workers near retirement age. How much of the industry is made up of these workers that are closing in on retirement?
Okay, so the mean age, about 47.9 years old, median age. And so we spoke to a lot of industry leaders in the process of pulling together this report, and we heard numbers of 15 to 25% retirement forecasts over the next sort of 10, 15 years. So it's a significant challenge, not just for the paper industry, but for all industry and business in Wisconsin.
So how is the state, how are these mills working to attract new talent?
Well, in a number of ways. I think mills are getting better at telling their stories. They're offering well-paying jobs. The state is supporting the paper science and chemical engineering program here at UW Stevens Point. It can always do more. It's the only paper science chemical engineering program combined in the state, and that program continues to put out highly trained graduates with 100% placement into the industry.
100% placement, a guaranteed job.
Right. And those starting salaries anywhere from $60,000, $70,000, up to $80,000.
We're talking with Paul Fowler. He is director of the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology at UW Stevens Point. Still time for your story in the paper industry, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Paul, with so many paper mills across the country and even globally, You were talking about trends earlier. What is the competition like for these mills in order to be lean and get their products out at the lowest cost possible?
Well, I think that is absolutely the key, is getting products out at the lowest cost possible. And so the competition, there is some foreign competition. There's a little bit of buffering for Wisconsin companies being in the Midwest. Companies out on the East Coast and the West Coast maybe do feel a little bit more of the foreign competition because of their closeness to the ports. So there is a little bit of a buffer there. Nevertheless, competing on a global stage, an issue of, I guess, some aged infrastructure here in the state. But we're seeing some pretty significant investments going into to at least begin to correct some of that aging infrastructure issues with the new mill project by Green Bay Packaging, investments announced by ND Paper at the Behring plant in Wisconsin, near Wisconsin Rapids.
Right. Well, last month, the company Georgia Pacific was supposed to take steps toward a major expansion in Green Bay, but plans were put on hold. And I think that was a century-old mill there. What is the status of those types of plans as we look at these paper mills that are a century old?
The only thing I know about the status is what I read in the press, and I think that Georgia Pacific reported that they did not postpone the project indefinitely. They still wanted to keep the application in with the government. I suspect they're looking at market forces. I said at the outset that tissue and towel are growing commodities, and we're seeing investments in other states, Georgia Pacific in Alabama, European companies putting up greenfield, building on greenfield sites, putting up new tissue mills. So I guess they're looking at what is the capacity in the market and so on.
When you say building on greenfield sites, what do you mean by that?
I'm saying that new mills are being built in the United States on not refurbished mills, but new plants from the ground up. Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you see on the technology front when it comes to contamination and how mills dispose of wastewater?
Well, we've seen a lot of progress over the last decade or so. The report really looks at the economic contribution of the mills. So we didn't spend a whole lot of time looking at the environmental aspects. But regulations enacted since 2010 have really shown huge improvements in air quality coming out of mills and impacting water quality too in a good way.
So what are researchers and industry leaders, maybe even lawmakers, working on right now to help the paper industry thrive in Wisconsin?
I think, you know, it's about a lot of it is about innovation. A lot of it is around just infrastructure, being able to transport materials efficiently, innovation around those huge opportunities for packaging, for food packaging, for performance materials. The so-called PFAS have caught the attention over the last sort of 6 months, 12 months or so, and companies innovating new coatings that are free from fluorine to provide the oil and grease resistance for paper products that are going into quick serve restaurants, fast food restaurants, and so on.
And as we start to wrap up here, what about the trees that go into making paper? Is there a ready supply here in the Midwest of the raw material?
Well, you know, that raw material mix is kind of changing. You may have heard of China's national sword policy, which essentially banned the import of recycled goods in the last couple of years or so, which has led to a huge supply of things like old corrugated carton boards, mixed paper, domestic supply which we didn't used to have, and so the fiber mix, the trees versus recycled, is kind of changing in Wisconsin. Number of mill conversions are converting to the use of recycled paper, so that is going to shift that balance, but you can't recycle paper indefinitely. You always need that virgin source of of trees, and so the fiber basket is there, but we're tracking how that mix changes and looking at how we innovate to keep that commercial logging industry robust over the next few years.
Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you are very welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Paul Fowler is director of the Wisconsin Institute for Sustainable Technology at UW-Stevens Point. Coming up, AmeriCorps members contribute hundreds of thousands of hours in Wisconsin each year. And now AmeriCorps is getting a boost in federal funding. What questions do you have about AmeriCorps projects? Have you worked on an AmeriCorps project in the past? What kind of service did you provide? Join in with your story, 800-642-1234. We'll talk about AmeriCorps after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about AmeriCorps projects in Wisconsin on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin received $7 million in AmeriCorps funding this year from the federal agency responsible for AmeriCorps and other national service programs. Back in June, we spoke with the recipient of an AmeriCorps Service Award about his work on a college readiness program in Eau Claire. Kong Ming Her signed up looking for a part-time job, but he found a calling.
It really resonated with me as a student of color. He wanted to support the local community who were underrepresented, who didn't see college as an option. The team that I worked with became like a family, and we just connected so well, and everyone there was driven by the same goal and passions.
Have you worked on an AmeriCorps project? What kind of service did you do? How did you feel about the work? Have you considered applying for an AmeriCorps position? What questions do you have? Join in at 800-642-1234. Jeannie Duffy is Executive Director of Serve Wisconsin. That's the state agency that manages federal funding for AmeriCorps projects here in Wisconsin. Jeannie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So help us understand this $7 million in funding. How does that compare to funding levels in the past?
You know, it's increased. We've been increasing our funding for AmeriCorps programs in Wisconsin every year for the past 2 or 3 years. So that is a nice positive trend we're on. And we're increasing the number of programs and the number of members serving around the state of Wisconsin.
So it seems all of this forward momentum here on volunteerism in the state. How does Serve Wisconsin fit into that picture?
So Serve Wisconsin, we are the Governor's Commission on National and Community Service for the state of Wisconsin. So our mission is to promote community service and national service. And national service is the AmeriCorps program and Senior Corps programs in the state of Wisconsin.
And they have quite the legacy going on 25 years, is that
right? AmeriCorps, as we're celebrating our 25th anniversary, we're actually celebrating it on October 11th. Congresswoman Gwen Moore, who is an AmeriCorps Vista alumni, is going to be our keynote speaker. But Senior Corps and AmeriCorps Vista have been around since the 60s, the War on Poverty.
Help us understand how the federal funding model works. How are federal funding levels decided for each state? Is it based on our population or our need or something else? Is it competitive?
It's both, actually. We have two applications for nonprofits or government agencies who are wishing to sponsor an AmeriCorps program in the fall, which will be starting in October. It's the competitive funding. And then every year, Wisconsin is allocated about $2.5 million of formula funding. So we are very fortunate to have $7 million because that is a combination of the competitive funding on the national level, which indicates what quality programs we have here in Wisconsin that we're able to attract so much competitive federal funding.
You're also attracting people. Roughly how many people get involved in our state's AmeriCorps projects each year?
Over 900 people are serving throughout the state of Wisconsin.
So that's quite a number, and
yes,
that's been growing,
as
you say. How often are service project workers being paid? How does the pay work?
So people earn a living allowance, and it's a small stipend. If you serve full-time, it's roughly $14,000 for the year. So it just barely covers your basic living expenses in Wisconsin. And so you get paid as equal installments every 2 weeks.
And so basically, you know, who are the people signing up for AmeriCorps? Who do you see fitting this volunteer profile?
Well, the stereotypical AmeriCorps volunteer member is between ages 20, 25. They're, you know, trying to figure out their life, perhaps, you know, taking a gap year from college. Maybe you're thinking you wanted to be a teacher. You could serve in an AmeriCorps program as a tutor in a school for a year or 6 months to decide if you really like teaching. It could be someone who's passionate about the environment and wanted to work on one of our state or national forests for the year and do conservation work or education works at our nature centers. We have people who work in health clinics and health centers. So people serve, but you don't have to be young. You can serve, you know, up until you're 80, however, I mean, or 90.
And if you're taking a gap year from college, a traditional college age student would be younger. How young can you serve?
You need to have a high school degree, or you need to be working towards a high school degree. So, you know, the minimum age is 17, mostly 18, but we try to, like, 20 is probably more the average. 20 to 25 would probably be the average age of our members.
We're talking with Jeannie Duffy. She's Executive Director of Serve Wisconsin. That's a state agency managing federal funding for AmeriCorps projects here in Wisconsin. You can join in. Do you support the federal government's funding of AmeriCorps? How do you feel about this service program? Should AmeriCorps focus more resources on education or healthcare or housing? What do you think? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jeannie, what are some of the areas that you see AmeriCorps volunteers making the most difference? Where do they serve?
They serve throughout the state in, like I said earlier, schools doing tutoring. They work in after-school programs, the Boys and Girls Club of Milwaukee here in Dane County. They work in middle schools doing after-school programming. They work in our state and national parks. We have a wonderful program, the Wisconsin Homeless and Runaway Youth Services, and they work in homeless shelters throughout the state, and they do direct street outreach. Every year they help over 3,000 homeless runaway youth get into safe housing, which unfortunately does not often mean going home. But to me, that's stunning that we can have, you know, thousands of homeless and runaway youth in Wisconsin. So it's a wide variety. You think, you know, we have members who serve up north as recovery coaches for the opioid epidemic. So these are people who have been previous addicts and have gone through recovery. And as part of their recovery process, they are helping others. They're coaching others through the recovery process and living soberly. So
have you seen a shift toward service in the area of addiction and the opioid crisis? Have you had to move and shift with the need?
Right. That is the benefit of AmeriCorps, is that we can be pretty nimble. And if there is a new community need, we can start a new program fairly easily, you know, with the correct sponsors and then finding the training for the members. So a couple years ago, the Opioid Recovery Corps program has been up for 3-4 years now. So it really sprung up during the height of the opioid epidemic. And when we have disaster service, when there's a disaster that hits Wisconsin, we can deploy our members to respond to the disaster. We're having a team of AmeriCorps and Senior Corps members. It's a nice intergenerational joint project working for the last week of September, first week of October, up in Oconto and Langley counties to help, you know, the big storms came through this summer. And so they're going to be doing a lot of debris and tree removal for that week.
How do you get volunteers prepared for their mission? What does that training look like?
So each program has their own training plan. And so usually members are starting now about the beginning of September. We kind of run on the academic year. And then they spend anywhere from a week to 3 weeks in training. So if you are going to be a tutor in a school, you have a tutoring program. There's a specific curriculum to be a literacy tutor. The homeless and runaway youth service members, they spend, you know, a week or two in training on how to deal with homeless and runaway youth, proper techniques of approaching homeless and runaway teens. And like I said, the Recovery Corps people, they do a serious 3-week training on recovery coaching and how to help people through addiction.
Well, let's take a call now. Tara is joining us from Luck. Hi, Tara. What is your story with AmeriCorps?
Hi. Hi, I am a former AmeriCorps from 21 years ago, and I just wanted to share that my experience as an AmeriCorps was one of the best years of my life. I learned how to be a leader. I learned how important serving was. And currently, I still work for the agency I served with, and I supervise current members. And it's really fun to see these young people develop leadership skills. And for some of them, the educational work is really essential for them to pay off student loans and such.
Tara, what is the organization you work for?
Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity.
Okay, so you're building homes.
Correct, and my members are working as volunteer coordinators and helping train volunteers in construction, which it's amazing because most of them come with zero skill in that regard, but they learn really quickly and are able to fill in as mentors and leaders to volunteers. It's great.
How important are having these volunteers to your organization? How key is that?
Well, we have over 20 members that serve with our organization, and it really impacts the volunteer experience out on site because a lot of volunteers come needing training, and it really adds value across the organization because it allows folks to have a better, you know, they're not waiting for instruction. There's somebody there working directly with them that can give them what they need right away, which means we can get more done in a day, and our quality's good.
Tara, thank you so much for sharing your story. Jeannie, she made her AmeriCorps service a career path.
Yeah, we find that a lot. People, once they start serving, they realize that is their passion, and she probably had a passion for housing and went and got some experience with a housing organization. And as she said that the members got their leadership skills and job training, that is the joy of AmeriCorps. It has the dual benefit of serving the community, meeting the community need, but also serving the member and providing them some good, solid leadership skills and job experience. And then, as she mentioned, the Ed Award, if you serve full time, you get $6,000 that you can use to pay for college tuition or any other, or like an apprenticeship program with a union, or you could use it to pay off student loans also.
We're talking about AmeriCorps funding and the related service projects around the state with Jeannie Duffy. She's Executive Director of Serve Wisconsin. That's the state agency managing federal funding for AmeriCorps projects. Do you support the federal government's funding of AmeriCorps? How do you feel about this service program? Should AmeriCorps focus more resources on a specific area, whether it's housing or education, healthcare? Be part of the conversation with your AmeriCorps story, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this in just a minute. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And if you're just joining us, we're talking about AmeriCorps funding and the volunteer program in our state with more than 900 members. AmeriCorps programs across Wisconsin are receiving $7 million in federal funding this year, and those dollars are used to help education achievement gaps, to help drug addiction, homelessness, environmental conversation, among other issues. So what questions do you have about AmeriCorps projects? Are you an alum? What do you want to know? Have you worked on an AmeriCorps project in the past? Were you helped by an AmeriCorps worker as a child or adult? Share your story, 800-642-1234. Jeannie Duffy heads up Serve Wisconsin, managing federal funding for service projects in our state, and she stays with us. Let's go back to the phones now. Jennifer is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Jennifer. What's your AmeriCorps story?
Good morning. Thank you for this great conversation about a great sort of a overlooked kind of a service opportunity in our world. I am an AmeriCorps alum in the 90s. I had been following a very academic track. I took a year off and went out and worked trails out in Oregon, helping out with the National Forest Service. It was a great hands-on opportunity for me, and I had a great time out there, came home to Wisconsin, got married, started a family, and I used my AmeriCorps scholarship to get my master's degree when my daughter was a baby.
Oh,
and
wow.
Now that same daughter, however, is now a freshman at Marquette University, and I am so proud to say that she is a second-generation AmeriCorps volunteer. She's working with Milwaukee Project 414 and helping out with inner-city kids while she works on her nursing degree at Marquette University.
Oh, that's a brilliant story, Jennifer. That is absolutely amazing. In your experience in Oregon, actually it would be the state of Oregon, what did you find that you took away about conservation in that experience?
Oh, it was amazing. It was, our theme was getting things done in Oregon, and it was, we were doing projects that needed to be done, but there weren't full-time, you know, expertise, you know, foresters that had the time, energy, funding to get things done at that time. You know, there was a lot of federal funding issues, there was government shutdowns, and those things needed to get done. The environment in Oregon is, like Wisconsin, an amazing resource. And we were able to go out there and clear trails that were covered in debris. We were able to reroute trails that were, causing water issues, you know, out there in the rainforest, that's a big issue. But we were able to get out there, have the manpower to help out with projects that just otherwise would not have gotten done.
Well, Jennifer, thank you for sharing your story and the generational legacy there. Jeannie, when you think about government service projects, you might not think about working on park trails or new roads that were really prevalent that happened during the Great Depression. Is AmeriCorps continuing to do that kind of work that Jennifer talked about?
Yes, we are. We do it nationwide. And here in Wisconsin, we have an AmeriCorps program called WISCORS, the Wisconsin Conservation Corps. And they send out crews of young people in the summer, well, all year round, but primarily in the spring, summer, and fall, to work in our state and county parks in here in Wisconsin to rebuild trails. They've also this summer have rebuilt some shelters that were built by the original Conservation Corps during the Depression.
Well, a bunch of AmeriCorps programs in Wisconsin focus on youth education. As you mentioned, after school activities, really strong college readiness. What role do you see AmeriCorps filling in the state's overall efforts to educate children?
Well, I think we fulfill one of those crucial gaps that we can really, our members have the time and the energy and the motivation to provide the one-on-one connection that kids often need and are maybe missing in their school day. Some kids, they start out the school year, you know, reluctant to have tutoring and have that, you know, be singled out as maybe needing tutoring. But we find out time and time again that the kids, you know, they bond with their tutors, their AmeriCorps members. They start looking forward to tutoring. Their attendance improves at school through tutoring and after-school programming. Our after-school programming really focuses on emotional and social learning, which study after study shows that's a big gap that kids have these days.
Where do you see needs for additional funding for education or after-school activities, but it's hard to find money from state or federal sources?
Right. So that is, you know, AmeriCorps is very effective. I mean, we have, as people aren't getting paid much, as I said earlier, $14,000 for the year. And that's all matched by local resources, too. So we can place members full-time in schools to fill those needs that schools can to provide the attention the kids need in the services.
Where do you see this program going forward and expanding? I mean, you see Wisconsin on this really great trajectory, growing in the number of members, growing in the number of service projects, but there is always a great need. So how do you choose between a program that combats homelessness in Milwaukee versus one that combats homelessness in Wausau?
Right. Well, we are constantly educating our elected officials about the importance of AmeriCorps, and there's a nationwide movement to fund, have enough members nationwide for 100,000 members a year nationwide. Currently, we're about 80,000 members a year. So that is one way. And all of our federal funding is matched at the local sources. So that's how we kind of amplify our presence too. Currently, every federal dollar that's brought into the state of Wisconsin for AmeriCorps funding is matched almost $35 to $1 for the $1 of federal funding.
Wow. Let's take another call now. Jeanette in McGregor, Iowa. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I was one of seven people that were working for different county conservation organizations on the west side of the Mississippi River. A number of the folks were naturalists doing school programs. I was doing restarting the program for a motor mill, a historic 1860s stone grist mill, talking about how land use changes have changed and how the people affect the land and how the land affects people, as well as tying historic stories in and doing some biology.
When was this, Jeanette?
This was in 2005 and 2006.
Yeah. Do you find that that was a really solid year for you, that is still special to you today?
Yes, it is, because actually my second year there, I turned down a better paying job, since AmeriCorps doesn't really pay much, because I was needing to be here to care for my mom. And I met my husband late that season.
Oh, wow.
and Motor Mill is a very, very special place. But also, my public speaking skills got very strong, because the first season I talked to over 1,000 people as the only tour guide the entire summer. So by the end of a weekend, I was often happy to go pull garlic mustard or go kill multiflora rose for a few days so I could recover my voice.
Jeanette, thank you so much for that story. Jeannie, that's really brilliant.
Yes. If you're willing to pull thorn brushes.
Anything goes there. Can people still apply to work on these AmeriCorps projects? What's the timeline?
Oh, yes. We have some programs like that, that recruit maybe once a year, but we have many programs that do ongoing recruitment. Especially some of our tutoring programs, they'll have a start time in the fall and then in January, second semester also. And then we have programs that work at summer camps, such as the Boys and Girls Summer Camps outside of Milwaukee, and also Easter Seals in the Wisconsin Dells. They do respite care and provide a true summer camp experience for kids with disabilities. So they are recruiting just for the summertime. So, and they also have programs throughout the winter on weekends. So
you really have a rolling type of a deadline based
right.
on the various needs in the communities
right.
that you serve.
Each program kind of has a different start time. So yeah, you can go to our website, servewisconsin@wi.gov.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Jeannie Duffy is Executive Director of Serve Wisconsin, a state agency that manages federal funding for AmeriCorps projects in Wisconsin. And you can find a link to Serve Wisconsin at wpr.org/mornings. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.